Welcome to the Candid Community Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast where we seek to equip you as a business owner, a community leader, an entrepreneur, or a leader wherever you may have influence. My name is Emily Russ, and I serve as the Director of Workforce and Marketing at Marion Economic Development Corporation in Marion, Iowa. Our organization, in partnership with the Marion Chamber of Commerce, recently hosted candidate forums featuring individuals seeking a seat on the Marion City Council, Linmar School Board, and Marion Independent School Board. While the forums happened back-to-back throughout one evening, we've chosen to release the recordings as separate podcasts. You are about to listen to the Marion Independent School Board candidates, which all were uncontested. Please remember to vote in the upcoming election on Tuesday, November 7th, and enjoy listening to these individuals as they share updates and progress about the district.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. If we could have you take your seats, we're going to get underway for the next forum for the Marion School Board. My name is Amy Reisner. I'm an attorney at Lynch Dallas Law Firm, and my law firm is a supporter of the Marion Chamber of Commerce, which is one of the entities that is sponsoring tonight's event, along with the Marion Economic Development Corporation. So good evening, and welcome to you all that are here, as well as welcome to the candidates. This is the last of three forums tonight. School boards play a unique role in not only school district governance, but they have a broad impact, of course, on citizens, businesses, and the broader community. To effectively execute their responsibilities, members must clearly understand their unique role and have a strong commitment to advancing student outcomes. Furthermore, it's important for school board members to understand how district decisions impact not only students, staff, but the community at large. This year, voters in the Marion Independent School District will elect four of these four candidates to fill at-large seats, and they are Denise Allison, who is an incumbent, John Fitch, incumbent, Carl Lannerman's incumbent, and then Michelle Rains. And unfortunately, Denise could not be here this evening. Because this forum is uncontested, we are going to just make this like a conversation as opposed to me being very rigid like the last time and holding people accountable to their timing. So we're going to just talk about a number of different issues and let them converse as they see fit, and we'll see how this goes. Of course, you can listen to this later on the Medco's Candid Community podcast. So with that, I will start down here with Michelle and have her introduce herself and tell us about why you want to serve on the board.
Okay, can you hear me? All right, my name is Michelle Smickley-Rains. I grew up in Marion. I've lived here my whole life, so I'm a lifelong Marionite. I graduated from Marion High School in 1985, and my fiance graduated in 1983, so I grew up in the Marion School District. My children also graduated from Marion. My son graduated in 2012, and my daughter in 2019. I've always been involved in Marion community activities. I've been on the Uptown Marion Committee for 10 years. I belong to the OOP Club, which is the oldest club this side of the Mississippi, which is also a bunch of Marionites. And I just have a heart for kids. My background right now, anyway, my current job, I work at Pearson, which is an education-based company. And I thought with that and my history of being lifelong Marion, living here this whole time, I thought that that would be a good next step to run for school board and see what I could do as far as helping with the community. And I have a passion for the facility, the faculty, the children. So I decided I'd throw my hat in the ring.
Very good.
Hi, my name is Carl Lantermans, and I've been serving for the Marion District for 4 years. I'm currently as vice president. When I first was interested in the board, I had been a member of the committee to interview superintendents, and I was part of the parent committee. And that was kind of my first look kind of at the backside of the school. I have three kids, two of them graduated from Marion. I have one daughter that's still at the high school as a junior. But it kind of sparked an interest, and then I I ran for school board, and in the 4 years, I've served on the SIAC committee, which is the School Improvement Advisory Committee. Currently, the Linn County, Linn County Conference Board representative, the SIAC committee meets three times a year, and we talk about the goals for the district, and it involves parents and board members and staff and superintendent as well. But it's been a real pleasure to serve on the board the last 4 years. We've had some challenging times through COVID, like everybody else, and I guess for the most part, it's been a rewarding position to be in, and I just look forward to serving another 4 years.
My name is John Fitch, and I do thank Medco for having us here tonight. And my background is I've been here in Marion since 1999, and I have three girls that have gone through the school district. Two of them have graduated, and one is a junior in high school. Prior to coming on the school board 4 years ago, I was a volunteer for basketball and football, doing the scoreboards or helping any way I could. And I had no idea what I was getting into 4 years ago, but it has certainly been a good learning opportunity and being able to give back to the community. My background is in civil engineering. I worked a lot with school districts, so I did have a little bit of idea how school boards ran as I presented a lot in front of them. So I knew that part, but other than that, I had to learn a lot in the first 2 years, just like these two. We've had our challenges at Marion, obviously with COVID, but we did go through a mascot change, which was its own challenge, but we worked through it. We had our disagreements as a board, but that is a part of being a board, is listening to one another and working through difficult times. We have our own challenges with continued enrollment fluctuations, but we continue to work through it. So as we move ahead, my goal is to continue to listen to families, their concerns. I want to continue to help challenge staff to be better, to meet new and challenging goals. They certainly are doing that now and will continue to step up to the plate. I want to continue to help support the curriculum that we've helped implement in the last couple of years. And it sounds like that is going wonderful. But as we look at our vision of Own Your Future and our mission of fostering a community of learners and developing knowledge and skills to be future ready, I really want to be a better district representative, be a positive influence for students, and just staying involved. And I really want to help students be future ready, and that is whether they are going into the workforce or going to college or into the military. Everything is vital, and it's just important to have everybody be successful in whatever endeavors they want to do.
So it looks like we're going to be dividing up some big topics amongst you, and we're going to start with Michelle first to just kind of give us an overview, big picture of the Marion Independent District.
Okay. I'll give you some fun facts about Marion first. We are the fourth oldest school district in Iowa. We employ over 370 people, serve over 3,100 students, approximately 1,100 HSAP, homeschooled students, $30 million annual school budget, open enrollment in from over 30 districts annually. Over 85% of students are involved in extracurricular activities, 4-year graduation rate at above 96%, 17% minority, 1% ELL, 13.2% special education, and 41.7% free and reduced lunch. Our Marion Independent School District boundaries, right now we are at 3.8 square miles. We are the second smallest district geographically in the state. We border from Tamas Street to 31st Street, Boyson Road, 14th Avenue to Grand and past Highway 100. What sets us apart? What sets MISD apart? We're urban, small school, and we have a family feel. Student involvement, many opportunities to support future readiness, parent support and involvement, community partnerships with Medco, the Chamber of Commerce, City of Marion, Tanager, Marion Police Department, HACAP, Foundation 2, and Boys and Girls Club. Academic excellence, collaborative relationships, student engagement, and the Marion Way. Trusted adult data measured annually range from 90 to 94%. High school students, 55% job or internship, 80% work-based learning. EAP, doctor on demand, our health benefits are 4 health plan options, individual enrollment meetings, fitness center, EAP, doctor on demand, MeQ, which is a health and wellness app, personal leave incentive, mentoring for classified staff, and a signing bonus. And let me just finish real quick with our vision is own your future. Our mission is foster a community of learners in developing the knowledge and skills to be future ready. We have 4 core values, which are academic excellence, collaborative relationships, student engagement, and the Marion Way, which is respect, responsibility, safety, and integrity. And our district goals, we have 5 of those. Each student will achieve at high levels across all academic areas. Establish and maintain a safe environment that supports the social, emotional, and behavioral needs of each learner. Attract and retain high-quality staff engaged in ongoing collaborative professional learning. Partner with families and the community to positively impact student outcomes. And 5, establish and maintain fiscally responsible and equitable systems for development, allocation, alignment of resources.
Thank you. And one of the things that we heard about, there was a forum before yours, is perhaps a trend, and I'm checking with you, where we're seeing a decline in enrollment in a lot of different districts across the state. Putting you on the spot a little bit, is that what Marion Independent is experiencing?
So we have seen a slight decline in enrollment. Marion's kind of unique. We have a large open enrollment population. Currently we are at about 34% open enrollment students, which is substantially higher than what you'd see in the metro, which they're well below 10%. But we have seen an increase in the overall open enrollment population in the last couple of years.
Okay, thank you for that. You've also had a lot of facility updates, it sounds like, and John's going to provide us with some details. So it sounds like you've got timing and current statuses on the stadium, Parkview Elementary, Francis Marion Intermediate, and the high school.
Yeah, so I took this one because this is my passion is construction.
And we're shocked.
I know. So we were very, very blessed on March 2nd of 2021 to pass a bond of $31 million. And that passed at 84.6%, which is almost unheard of. So with that, we went right in and we started with the athletic complex primarily because Thomas Park, that was going to become the future home of Parkview Elementary. And so just in the last 3 years, combined with the bond, the general obligation bond, which was a tax neutral bond, we had our save bonds, we had some insurance money from derecho, and then we also had the inflation reduction funds that came during the time of COVID. So all those add up to $50 million, believe it or not, of work that we either have already completed or are currently under construction. So it's really amazing. So the high school, many of you have seen it, I hope anyway. We had a great football season, but it really started last track season that we opened it. But that is a new 8-lane track with turf. It has a new press box. That's where I get to sit doing the scoreboard. It has an elevator for ADA accessibility, full-time practice or a full-size practice field to the south of the stadium that's fully irrigated. And then, of course, we had two additional parking lots complete with some ADA parking, which we never had at the old stadium. So it's wonderful. And if you would have been there at the storm event 2 weeks ago, the field performed wonderfully. If it would have been at Thomas Park, it would have been a mud bowl pretty much. So that project is pretty well completed. Next, we had the Francis Marion Intermediate renovations. That started in March of 2022. That included some new classroom spaces to the south of the existing building, new restrooms. It had a storm shelter. It included tearing down the old east wing, and now we have a new entrance that when you arrive to the school, you know where to go, instead of not knowing where the office was. So that's been a wonderful addition, and we've been in there for our first board meeting actually this past week, which is really, really nice. And then it doesn't come without its own issues. It was 99% complete with the renovations, and 2 weeks ago we had that rain event and had a little bit of flooding in the older part of the school. So now we're working through that, new carpet, new ceiling tile, just a lot of different things due to some inaccurate or incomplete roofing that had taken place prior to the storm event. But we're getting through that. Our next project was Parkview Elementary. That we had our groundbreaking on April 10th of this year. We've had wonderful weather, and that project is moving really, really well, and I'm hearing rumors that we are ahead of schedule, so we'll try to keep that going. But that is a pre-kindergarten through second grade. It does have a storm shelter in that facility, flex spaces, sensory rooms. We actually have some new bus parking area to the east side of the school. Natural light, it's really, really gonna be a nice setting for the pre-K through second graders, each with kind of their own little different pods. That is projected to be completed in summer of 24 and occupied for the school year in the fall of 24. And our latest project that we're under construction now is the auditorium. And that project, groundbreaking, was April 10th of this year. It's 750 seats. That is going to be a wonderful addition for the school. I could look at some of our audience members and they could tell us how many years we've been waiting for this auditorium. 20, 25 years maybe. But it also will serve as a storm shelter, single-use restrooms. It will have a new secure entrance for the high school. And if you have not been over there in the past week, we have walls going up, and it's going to look like it's going to go up fast, and it's really fun to watch. And so that project is actually supposed to be completed in the spring of 2025. And then lastly, we're just wrapping up our high school HVAC. Those funds mostly really came from the ESSER or the Inflation Reduction Funds, and that is a very nice welcome addition, especially with the hot fall that we had this year. So that we finally have all of our schools with air conditioning.
And quick question, as I think about the derecho, have you been able to replace tree canopy? Has that been a goal, and are you working on that on campuses?
You know, that's a great question. I don't even know how many trees we lost in all of our main campus. We've put in some new trees as a part of the new stadium project, but it really hasn't been a focus area for the board.
Okay, thank you. Carl, I kind of talked about enrollment already. Did you have anything else that you wanted to discuss on enrollment?
So yeah, going back to the enrollment, I did mention we have a large open enrollment population. And that does, it is a great thing to have the open enrollment students there, and they do come from 30 different districts, which is pretty amazing. And like I said, we also have the largest homeschool assistance program in the state, and it's a really robust program as well. The difficult part with the open enrollment is the funding from the students. Not all of that funding follows the students. There are portions of when you open enroll, some of that money stays with the district. So funds that do not fall a student are the teacher salary supplement, professional development supplement, early intervention supplement, dropout prevention, talent and gifted program funding, early literacy implementation, and then some saved dollars too are that are for school infrastructure projects. That money doesn't follow the student when they open enroll. So to help work with, well, let me back up here for a second. And this does create a deficit for our district. Last year we had a $1.5 million deficit, which was a byproduct of those open enrollments. But we do work with our state legislators on ways that they can help us to pass legislation to help us with that unique problem. Like I said, it's kind of a unique problem to Marion, that open enrollment numbers. We do need those students. Our district, as Michelle mentioned, is very small geographically. And as the properties in Marion age, you know, a lot of times the students, you know, they grow out of those houses and then the people stay in those houses. And so we kind of run out of students, if you will. So while the open enrollment is necessary for our school district to thrive, it does have its challenges.
Are you forecasting another deficit for the upcoming year?
I don't know that we're forecasting that. It's been a little bit of a trend downward. I'd say we were 34 students down from last year, which isn't a great number, but I think with our open enrollment as robust as it is, I think we kind of fluctuate up and down each year. The last couple years we've seen a little bit of a decline, but not enough to panic at this point.
What about your achievement data? I think that's the next question that's up. What's that looking like, and what's the focus for the year?
So our achievement data, the trend, we've got, when it relates to math, science, and reading, those are the core things that are measured. We've implemented a new reading curriculum, like John mentioned. They're past the implementation phase, so they're really working to improve those reading scores, and that's kind of been the focus for our student achievement. And I don't know if anybody else has anything else to share about that.
That is one of our strategic goals, is to improve the reading proficiency. And all of the board members were just at FMI just this past Monday, and to listen to the enthusiasm and the excitement amongst the teachers, they're now in that second year of their curriculum, just what they're doing to get those kids to have better proficiency. The kids are so excited because there'll be six of them that will go with a teacher to try to work in, like, as a small group for 30 minutes. That's all they can get. Or it might be even an individual that goes with a teacher for 30 minutes. But they're excited to see incremental growth of whatever it might be, a few words. And so the teachers, they're seeing the excitement amongst the students. And I truly believe, anyway, based on just what they are seeing and what they're giving us for information, the excitement that's building, even at FMI for the third and fourth graders, those kids are going to meet these new goals that are being set, because the proficiency after COVID, it really went down and to like 66% proficiency, and the goal is 80%. So that's the challenge right now, especially after COVID, and I'm sure it's not just our district, it's every district, but we have a goal of 80%, and those teachers and their leadership groups, they are pushing to hit those goals.
Well, while you're on the topic, why don't you discuss a little bit more about the strategic plan?
How much time do you want?
So, let's see, just another hour,
I think. Yeah, so we have five main goals for our strategic plan. I'm not going to try to elaborate a lot on them, but I will kind of go through the main points. The first one is each student will achieve at high levels across all academic areas. This does include graduation rates of at least 95%. We have been achieving that. We have not dipped below that 95%. I'm sorry. We are currently at 92%, and so we are trying to elevate that up just a little bit higher to the 95. Our second sub-goal for that is by May of 2024 to increase the percent of K through 6 students demonstrating reading proficiency. That's what I was just talking about. To go from 66%, which was found in May of 2019, to 80%. We did take a dip after COVID. We're trying to build that back up. And I gave you this story, and so we're working hard, and the teachers are working very hard. The third sub 1.3 where was we will increase the percent of students demonstrating college readiness with the ACT. That's kind of unique in itself in how the even colleges now are starting to look at how they're accepting students. So we wanted to have an ACT composite of 22 or higher from 68.63% in 2017, where the state average was 50.59, and we want to increase that to 70. And actually last year we took a pretty hard dip in that. So they're looking at ways of how they can increase those ATC composite scores. We hope they can get there. And then lastly, in May of 2024, we'll increase the percent of students demonstrating proficiency in reading, math, and science in grades 3 through 11 on the Iowa State Assessment Student Performance. And Carl has slightly touched on that. But we're doing good in reading and math for the most part. Science has some work to do. But again, with our leadership and the way they communicate with those students and the way they're communicating back to us, I have no doubt that we're going to hit our goals. And that's what they're going to continue to strive. We had an example this past Monday of a story where kids, I'm sure, are learning more today in second grade than I learned. If I did learn it in second grade, it's long gone. But just them coming up to teachers and saying, did you know about the spleen and the liver and things for the internal body parts? And they're explaining all this to their teachers. That's pretty exciting for these students with this new curriculum to be learning that at such a young age to be able to even explain it back to their teachers. So we're going to get there. Our second goal is to establish and maintain a safe environment that supports the social, emotional, and behavioral needs of each learner. We touched on the trusted adult survey in the opening comments by Michelle, and we have been sitting in about the 90 to 92% range for all students on having a trusted adult in the system. And our goal is to get that up to 95. So that every student knows who they can go to, someone that they can trust, that they can confide in. And so we're working on that and slowly moving that percentage up. We'll maintain the average daily attendance at or above 95%. And we're fortunate to be in the 92 to 94 range, but our goal is slightly higher. And so we're trying to get up to that 95 for students to be in attendance. And there's no doubt there's teachers that are following students, especially in those elementary years, on why aren't they at school, following up to see how they can get them there on a consistent basis. And lastly, as measured by the annually administered conditions for learning survey, increase the composite score from a 32.18 in spring of 2019 to 55 in spring of 2024. Are we going to get there? The goal's set. It's up to the students and teachers. They're working on lots of goals, so we'll see if we can get there on that measurement. Our goal three is to attract and retain high quality staff engaged in ongoing collaborative professional learning. And that consists of administrative staff will use data from learning walks to engage in professional conversation with 100% of certified staff throughout the school year. And we get results on how many walks is the leadership team doing each month. And some months are really high. Sometimes they just can't get to it every month, but they are continually striving to get with 100% of those teachers and implementing the professional development.
Yeah, I'd just like to jump into, we had a visit at the Francis Marion Intermediate, that's a third and fourth grade building. And we met with some of the teacher leadership team and the principal there, and it was really encouraging to see the collaboration amongst the staff there. and the leadership team. They're really passionate about what they do. And that's really exciting for the board to see that and in person and see them working together to try to solve those problems and those achievement gaps between third and fourth grade. You can just tell that they're excited to be there and they're excited to see those incremental improvements in the students' achievement. So I was just it's a good view from the kind of the backside of the education where you typically as a parent you wouldn't see that, but you can see the passion in our teachers and our leadership.
Thank you for jumping in there. Our fourth goal is to partner with families in the community to positively impact student outcomes. This includes volunteer hours of giving back and really trying to encourage students to give at least 25 or more volunteer hours. That doesn't seem like a lot, but we heard earlier that 85% of our students are in some kind of an extracurricular activity. And so we continually are striving, and the teachers are striving to get the students to do some kind of volunteer hours. And if you get those hours, more than 25 hours, but you do actually get a silver cord at the time of graduation. So that's something that we're trying to increase from 50% in 2018 and 19 to 60% in 23-24 to have that career readiness and volunteering to give back to your community. We will increase the percent of high school students participating in a job shadow or internship from 30% in 2018-19 to 50%. And in the last 2 years, those numbers for internships and job shadows have just jumped tremendously. We're up in the upwards of 80% in the internship category from 30-40% just a couple of years ago. So it's through the great partners of Medco and Kirkwood and others to really encourage our students to get in work job shadows or into an internship before they graduate. And then we'll maintain the percent of families accessing PowerSchool to view student progress at least quarterly for students grades 5 through 12 at or above 80%. And that's more of just just the encouragement of keeping people involved and parents engaged. Our last goal is to establish and maintain fiscally responsible and equitable systems for development, allocation, and alignment of resources. And this really gets into our solvency ratio, our unspent authorized budgets. And really, in both of those categories, we are doing really well. We have a great business manager that really keeps the board informed, keeps us engaged, making sure that they're actually staying on task. And then the last one there is to really, we really struggled many years, even into my first year or two being on the board, of having a true 5-year master plan of maintenance projects. And that is something they would develop and will maintain a 5-year facility plan, which includes preventive maintenance, monitoring, and updating on a biannual basis. And that plan is working. And as I mentioned, how many dollars we have spent just in the last 3 years, but we are spending money right now on lots of maintenance, especially even at the high school, different small projects that just are long overdue, and it's great to have a plan and to put that into action.
Thank you. Michelle, you're up to tell us a little bit about the key legislative initiatives for the upcoming legislative session.
All right, if I can go back to the first question when you asked me to introduce myself.
Sure.
The hardest thing was, why do I want to be on the board? And it's because of this stuff, this exciting stuff. I want to be involved in the growth and meeting our goals. So when I was introducing myself and you're kind of nerve-wracked up here, this is the reason why, is to achieve those goals. So right now I'll go over some key legislative initiatives. I'm going to mention four of them. The first one is SSA, which is Supplemental State Aid, including dropout and at-risk funding. Everything comes down to adequately funding our schools. The inequity of the dropout at-risk funding is a big concern for Marion Independent. We are capped at 2.5% that we can request funding and tax for, while other districts can go as high as 5%. Equalizing these percentages across districts would allow allow districts with lower percentages like MISD to generate additional funds through taxes that would assist us in providing equitable services for all students in our state. Number two is bond issues. The maximum amount we can bond is based on a calculation that includes our current debt. There was legislation passed that states that bonding capacity should not include saved tax dollars. However, the saved tax dollars are included in the calculation that is used to determine a district's bonding limit. Our concern is the impact of counting all levies in calculation rather than just voter-approved go bonds. Number three is teacher retention and professional development. And once again, funding plays a key role in hiring, retention, and development of our teachers. We need a narrative around educationers as professionals and not just teachers. Teachers make up about 50% of our staff, and it takes all roles to educate our children, including bus drivers, custodians, nurses, librarians, and paraprofessionals. Flexibility in licensure options still require necessary training for the success of these individuals. And our fourth initiative is preschool is also a high priority for MISD. Specifically funding at 1% rather than 0.5%. MISD currently offers a full day preschool option, and we may have to charge for this option, but still lose, we have to charge for this option, but still lose a substantial amount of money because the charge does not cover the actual cost. The charge causes an inequity because not all families can afford it. Our district is discussing how much longer we can continue to offer full-day preschool without this funding. Research has demonstrated that children who take part in early childhood education are more likely to succeed in school, and we support these state policies to ensure all school districts have the capacity to serve all 4- and 5-year-olds. Providing resources for districts to provide services such as full-day programming, transportation, and wraparound care, and provide support and resources to support the behavioral and educational services for preschool-aged students.
You didn't swallow that bug, did you? Okay. That's good. That would be a first for me at a forum. Okay, last topic is the PEPL, which is the physical plant and equipment levy, and it sounds like Carl and John are going to give us a little bit of a primer on that.
So PEPL, it's kind of a necessary thing for our school districts. It stands for the physical plant and equipment levy. On November 7th, voters will be asked to renew the existing PEPL levy, which is used to maintain and repair district facilities. Renewal would ensure funds for another 10 years. Renewing the levy will not increase property tax rate. Yay. What is PEPL? The Physical Plant and Equipment Levy is a voter-approved levy that serves as a revenue source for funding school infrastructure and equipment repairs, purchases, and improvements. The levy generates approximately $1 million per year, which will be essential in maintaining our new and existing facilities. It's on the ballot this November, and it's public. I forgot what the public measure was, but there's a public measure on there, what the number was. But there's a public measure, and I just encourage everybody to vote yes. It's not a new tax. It's just renewing a tax that's already in existence, and it will definitely help our school district thrive and maintain our new and existing facilities.
Carl, did you have anything else to say?
Well, I might add to that. Our business manager and some of our staff did a fabulous job of taking a bus around to the different schools and interviewing different people on what this PEPL, this $1 million a year, what it really supports. And they did a fabulous job, and if you're interested in looking at that video, it is found on our website. But it really does, it really incorporates a lot of different things, including buses and vans and the general maintenance of our district's facilities. So without that, it it just adds that much more burden. So I can't stress enough, as Carl has indicated, that it's an existing levy, and it's not new, and it's not increasing the taxes.
I guess in closing for me, I would just encourage whoever's watching to, if you're thinking about a place to find home, Marion Independent School District is a great district. We've got great leadership, we've got great staff, and we've got great students. So I would just ask, you know, why not Marion? And if you have any questions, you can certainly reach out to any board member. We'd be happy to talk with you about all the exciting things going on in Marion Independent School District. And thanks again to Medco for offering this opportunity for our school district. And thank you again for the partnerships that we have in the homeschool. The partnership in building a building trades program to build or remodel a house every year. That's an instrumental part of our community to teach these young men and women how to build, how to construct things, and promotes them to be future ready in a career, maybe right out of high school. It's just a great opportunity and other ways that Medco helps support our district. Thank you.
We have a few minutes left. Anyone else with a final comment or two to wrap up? Boy. Politicians and school board candidates who aren't saying anything further, okay, we're going to get out of here early. Well, on behalf of the Marion Economic Development Corporation and the Marion Chamber of Commerce, thank you very much for being here and sharing your comments, and thanks to the audience members who are here. We have to remember that the decisions made by school board members obviously critically shape policy and impact the community at large, as well as the overall quality of the school system. And of course, don't forget to vote Tuesday, November 7th. Thank you.